Welcome, Lee. Glad to have you here. You want to spend just a couple of minutes introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about how you got to where you are today and some of the things that you have done in your career?
Sure, be happy to. So my name is Lee Dirks. I'm the Director for Education and Scholarly Communication at Microsoft Research. I've been at Microsoft coming up on 14 years now, which is hard to believe. I actually started at the company as the corporate archivist, and there's a whole long story behind that, but I served as the corporate archivist for several years, which was a part of the corporate library. And then I did a little stint in the technical services, collections and technical services, and then ended up running the corporate library, at least the physical and online presence within the company. After that, I moved into market research and moved to a different part of the company and worked in the centralized marketing organization for about 4 or 5 years. And then about 3 years ago, moved into the Microsoft Research division, where I've been in external research since 2007. My background prior to that is I actually started working in libraries as a student in my undergrad days, and had a cool experience from my perspective. I was actually hired by the circulation desk as a summer student, but they lent me out to every part of the library. And so over the course of the summer, and then I kept the job for about 2 years, I worked in reference, I worked in technical services, I worked in cataloging. So it was a fantastic job because I got to see the way the library worked. And when it came time to go to grad school, I was thinking, well, do I go get a job or do I go to grad school? And actually one of the reference librarians, this is at Trinity University in San Antonio, one of the reference librarians said, you know, you should go to library school. And I'd never heard anything funnier in my entire life. I thought, library school, you can go to school? That's hilarious, tell me more. And later on, 2 or 3 months later, there I was sitting and pinning all my applications to different library schools. So I ended up going to get my master's degree at Chapel Hill University, North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Where I thought I was going to go into information management. And so I started off on that track, but I became fascinated by rare books, manuscripts, archives, preservation, specifically preservation of those media. And so I finished my master's there, but I kind of specialized a lot, even though at the time Chapel Hill wasn't very focused on rare books, archives, manuscripts. I did what I could and kind of pulled together some independent studies, but decided I wanted to go to Columbia. So I went to Columbia, and focused on specifically preservation. And I'll skip the kind of, I worked for OCLC, I did a few other things along the way, but came to Microsoft in 1996. And the kind of irony is, although I went off on this, you know, rare books and manuscripts and preservation, I've ended up working obviously back at a high-tech IT company where I do a lot of information management. And so it's kind of funny that I veered away from that in my first year in grad school.
So tell me a little bit about what you do now.
The team I work with at Microsoft is within Microsoft Research is specifically focused on higher education. And so what we're trying to do is work with the higher education audience, and specifically the researchers. So we work a little bit with educators on teaching and learning, but we also are very focused on the people doing research and how we can, from a Microsoft Research perspective, how we can improve the products that Microsoft puts into the marketplace for higher education, but specifically to enhance increased productivity for academic researchers. And so we're fundamentally working under the idea that most academic institutions have licensed Microsoft software. And so what we're trying to say is your school has already bought and paid for this, but what we want to do is kind of add some value on top of that and make sure that if you're using it, that you're having the most positive experience. If it's not doing what it needs to do to help you on your day-to-day basis, talk to us. And what we do is we build a lot of add-ins, accelerators, things in and around existing Microsoft software that we give away, actually open source, no charge, to the community. And so to kind of augment Microsoft's offerings in this space. And the way I look at it is kind of go the last mile to make sure that, you know, a physicist or a scholarly publisher or a librarian is more able to make use of Microsoft technology in their day-to-day work.
Great. So I don't know if you do any hiring right now, but I know you've been in positions in the past where you've had to hire a lot of people. What kinds of things do you look for in a first level professional hire? What sort of qualities and characteristics?
So I'm actually hiring right now, so it's top of mind. I'm not hiring an entry level position, but I certainly have done that in the past. things that I look for in a resume, especially from someone coming right out of school, is several things. But one of which is I look at a diversity of activity that that student or that recent graduate has done. And by that I mean, you know, maybe looking outside of the department, maybe other classes they've taken to augment the main curriculum that they have in that school. I look at a job that might be a little bit different than coming straight out of that department. I mean, so something where they might have had some other experience where they've been able to apply the learnings they had from their coursework in a different setting. So I look for that kind of diversity, diversity of experience. I look for someone that's able to, in their resume, state what they accomplished, not just here's my experience or here's what my responsibilities were, but literally what I accomplished and what I learned from that. And there's different ways to kind of make that kind of come across in a resume, but the ability to say I learned X and I was able to do Y is critical. And you know, the ability to call that out in a crisply in a resume is important too.
When you think of people that you've worked with in the past, either first level or beyond, mm-hmm. what kinds of characteristics would you sort of describe as being those of a star employee,
right.
somebody who really performs and does what you think is excellent work?
The strongest employees that I've worked with, there's numerous, I think, numerous qualities. One is the ability not to be fazed by change. That's an easy thing to say and a really hard thing to actually deliver on. But at least in the environment that I work in, you come in every morning and your job could be completely different. The strategy has changed, the tactics have all changed, the players have changed, and the ability to stay focused on, okay, what are the goals today and what do I need to do is important. So the ability to kind of persevere through change. Another crucial point, I think, is project management, is to be very attentive of what are we trying to accomplish? How long do I have to accomplish that? How many resources do I have? And be able to balance those things to achieve an outcome. And to come in every morning and say, are the goals the same? Are we still trying to do this? But manage that project and work, you know, with people. There's another important thing, which is communicating up and down. So above to your management and down to the people that you might be working with or that might be working for you. And that's just complete transparency in both directions. If you know you're missing a deadline, if you're running over budget, if there's some issue, communicate that as quickly and as clearly as possible to management so that they're not surprised. Likewise, if you've got some tough messages or the deadline has changed or whatnot, communicate that to your team and the implications. So that's just three, but I could come up with about 40 more. But there's a ton of things. I'll add one more: the ability to kind of be picked up and dropped into a new area. And this is kind of going back to the change concept, but the ability to, everything changes, or you've done a great job in this job, and now I need you to go do take some of those same concepts, but I need you to put you in a completely different area. And that freaks a lot of people out because they're like, no, this is my expertise. But a good manager will recognize the ability of that individual to adapt to a new environment and bring some of those same skills and perspectives in the new role. And not just in my experience at Microsoft, but or my experience managing or my experience hiring, but looking at successful people across Microsoft, they will one day be in human resources, the next day be in the server business, the next day be an information worker. You know, they will move all around the business and be able to contribute at a high level. So.
Flexibility.
Absolutely. That's the word I was looking for. Flexibility.
So clearly the things that people need to know these days don't all come from their education. And how much do you think people need to learn on the job as opposed to learn in school? And how does that balance out in a work life?
So one thing that I've seen at the iSchool, I've taught a couple of classes at the iSchool, and things that I've tried to bring to the class, but is applying the real world while you're in class. And so whether that's you bringing ideas from your work or your past experience and saying, I'm going to make this into a project, or having the professor actually say, you know, we need some real world experience and bring this in. But as much as possible saying, this is a real world scenario and there's a likelihood that I could take this back to my manager or to the team I work with and apply this is critical. One of the things, again, a couple of times that I taught here, I tried to give very practical readings to the students. where, you know, it would be something that, you know, here's some best practices that I found in some articles, and I got positive feedback from the students saying, man, this was fantastic, because I was able to take this back to my manager, and we were able to say, yep, we can apply these like tomorrow. And so I'm very much on the, you know, applied versus theoretical. I'm very much on the applied side, and I was very, I'm just enthused to see that approach utilized across the iSchool. So on-the-job training is crucial, but I think we can bring a lot of that into the classroom. I think the iSchool has done a fantastic job partnering with corporations and with companies in the area and bringing them in a very effective way to infuse that into the iSchool.
You said you were hiring right now. What are the positions, not just in your organization, but across Microsoft or beyond that, if you have visibility, that are the hardest to fill right now? And looking 2 years down the road or 10 years down the road, do you think that's going to change, or will it be the same? What kind of jobs are out there that people are looking for?
Yeah. I wouldn't say the type of job. It's always going back to my earlier point, or your earlier point about flexibility. It's finding good people that can change and can adapt. That's the important thing. And so it's not saying we're always going to, you know, program manager is probably the one of the more critical roles at Microsoft. Yes, developer, yes, tester, but program management is that connection between a lot of the different roles in terms of software development that people point to as a strategic point. Now, yes, good program managers are sometimes hard to come by, but at the end of the day, they have a lot of basics. Yes, it's great if they've had development background, and great if they've had test background, but at the end of the day, they need to run a project, they need to be good managers, they need to know how to handle and communicate. I mean, it's a lot of the basics will come back. To your point, or to a point that you made me think about, when I started at Microsoft in 96, I was in the information services group. It was a group of about 75 people. I would say 73 of them had master's degrees in library science. That group got winnowed down over time, over, you know, budget cuts and transitions, et cetera. It's probably about 30 or 40 people, probably 30 or 40 of which have master's degrees in library science. But the remaining 30 or 30 people ended up getting disseminated across the company. And now if you look at, for instance, the University of Washington, the iSchool graduates, I'm going to guess there's 70 to 100 probably around Microsoft, and they're not in the corporate library. They're in every role. They're in, you know, content management. They're in research. They're in all of these different roles. So they're not just librarians anymore. They're disseminated across the company, and that's fantastic. I don't like having them all in one place with a big target on them. I like them, you know, across the company. And I think that is a strength of the iSchools to been able to provide, you know, human resources across a variety of different roles for a corporation. Sure. The same goes at Boeing. The same goes at other places in the area.
So when someone comes out of school, they have a certain set of knowledge, but they often may have misperceptions about what it's like to be in the workplace. Do you find that when new hires come into a work area that they have some adjustment problems? And if they do, what are the kinds of things that are usually popping up that are most difficult to deal with?
Yeah. My one answer to that is ask questions. The best thing that a person can do is just say, help. can you don't pretend you know what you're doing and go off in the wrong direction, but, you know, go back to your manager and say, you know, is this what you meant? Just keep checking in until you feel comfortable that you do have the necessary direction. More often than not, it's not that the person doesn't know what they're doing, it's that they're trying to understand how that culture that they've now been dropped into works, and what the expectations, the cultural expectations and norms of that new organization are, whether it be Microsoft or Boeing or Weston or Alaska Airlines, whatever the case may be in the area. I think the crucial thing is developing that relationship with your manager, going back to your manager and from time to time and saying, hey, is this on track? Can we set up a time to check in and go over my work to date? It might be working with peers before you go back to your manager. Hey, can I ask you to take a look at this? And then once you've gotten that feedback, then go back to your manager early on. But I would not hesitate going back to my manager. I think that's the most crucial thing. The last thing you want to do is not check in for a couple of weeks and go down the wrong path.
Yeah, good point. Well, let's look at it a little bit differently now. We've been talking about individuals and new hires and people working in an organization. Can you step back a little bit and look at the landscape of work in general, the profession in general, information management, library science, and think about what kinds of things are happening right now that are fairly important in the field and that may in fact be changing the landscape for both employers and employees as time goes on.
One of my fears for information management or for library education moving forward is that we're not moving far enough fast enough. I feel like we have a legacy that library education going back 100 years, information management going back 40 or 50 years. I feel like we've kind of figured out our niche and we're kind of continuing to produce in that area. Meanwhile, corporations, software developers, et cetera, have taken a lot of the ideas that librarians or information managers came up with over the past few decades, have applied them and are outpacing us and are outstripping us. You know, it could be Google, it could be Microsoft, it could be any number of small startup companies are taking, taxonomies, ontologies, et cetera, a lot of the work that, we've developed, I would like to think that, our field has developed, and they're doing things with them. We can participate in that, but I feel like we are going to lose that to other departments, perhaps on campus, could be computer science, it could be to technical communications, and I feel like we need to bring a lot of those things in. Maybe it's in partnership with those departments, but I'm very cautious of us getting kind of cut out of the marketplace and technology or corporations zooming by, even Microsoft. I think that we need to change and focus not on existing publications. One of my kind of saws is not to continue to work exclusively with books and journals, but start working with the data that underlies them. Start thinking about how we can capture that data, how we can share that data, how we can provide visualizations and analysis on top of that data. And I really think that that's data itself is going to surpass at a certain point the publication of articles or publication of books. That primary source needs to be something that librarians or information managers focus on. To me, that's a huge opportunity for high schools around the world.
So as that shift happens, do you see different kinds of education being necessary, different skill sets, different bodies of knowledge that need to be incorporated into a professional's repertoire, something that they have to work with?
The way that I would look at that is we can't do things by ourselves in our own department or staying within our own building. To this end, I think whether it be working with the libraries to go out to other departments on campus or to corporations and to say, hey, we'd like to work with your data sets and to build those multidisciplinary or extracurricular outside of campus to work in partnership with industry or with other departments to say we need some test corpuses, we need some test data sets to work with, and to show that value as part of your coursework, but have that impact on people that are practitioners in the field or actual corporations is something that the iSchools need to really look at and to augment their curriculum in that way.
So clearly the changing landscape requires that people need to keep up with it, and there's lots of ways of doing that. What are some of the best ways you've found in your own career or watching other people to keep yourself current, to learn new things, to be aware of what's going on around you as the landscape changes?
Right. You're probably not going to like the answer to this, but I've got a stack of papers in my desk about that high. I actually still print off papers and try and read them and tackle them when I'm on the plane or whatnot. So I probably haven't read a good novel in a few years. All I do is read technical reports and academic papers. That's one way of keeping it, and it's crucial. It's interesting. My experience is, every couple of months, one paper does kind of pop, and everyone in the field starts talking about it. You definitely want to, read that and stay on top of that. And then, if possible, trace some of the citations and find some of the supporting papers, key ones to that. My own personal experience is going to a handful of key conferences every year, and not only going and finding the interesting talks, but finding the people that gave those talks and catching them in the hallway or catching them at the dinner or buying them a drink or something and talking to the people. It's sometimes you might feel, oh, they're unapproachable. They're totally not. And my experience has been you know, try and make a personal connection with those people and build a relationship. And it really puts obviously a face on with a name that, you know, and gives you extra insight into that paper, into that talk. There's no better way to learn best practices than to go hear that presentation and then follow up with those people and say, oh, fantastic. Can you mind if we talk, or can I connect you and your staff with me and my staff and have a follow-on conversation after that? So don't let those people be, you know, unapproachable. But my experience 9 times out of 10 is people are very, very eager to share their best practices with you.
So you mentioned conferences. Conferences require travel money and expense money to get to,
right,
which is often pretty scarce for a first level person.
Correct.
Coming into an organization. Are there other ways to replicate that experience? Professional associations?
Yeah. Well, another thing I would say is more and more, after a conference, say you can't actually attend it, more and more you're able to actually go to the website and find that the sessions have been taped and the email and contact information, the slide deck is right there. It's just crucial for you to maybe talk to your professors or talk to your manager and find out what the key conferences are, and then go online and find, you can go back 2 or 3 years and find things that are of interest. But the thing is, I would close that loop, meaning I would go back to the person that gave that presentation and track him down and contact him. So if you can't make it to that conference, you know, you can go online and find that information. But I think the crucial part is not just reading that, not just reading the paper, or not just looking at the PowerPoint, but actually trying to reach out and contact that person.
So the network is the important part.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, if you can get to the conference, that's, you know, that's the ideal scenario, because you know, the ability to sit down and chat, sure, with people, you know, in the hallway, at the, you know, for drinks or whatnot, is, you know, there's no replacing that. But until then, you know, read their stuff and then and contact them via email.
So if you were able to tell someone who's about ready to enter the field what they should, the most important thing they should know, what would that be?
Oh man, one thing.
Or many, many.
All right.
If you had just some time to talk to somebody and say, you know, you're starting out in your career, here's the things that you really should pay attention to and think about as you move into this field.
Yeah. One of the things I mentioned earlier, which is just basic project management skills. Some people think it's really hard, some people think it's really easy, some people take it for granted, but it's something that applies on a meta level and a macro level. I mean, it is micro and macro levels, sorry, that you just need to apply on a day-to-day basis or over a 2 or 3 year project. It's something that I know is taught in the iSchool now. I think people need to seek it out, practice it, and you can practice that in the course of a quarter when you're taking a class, and take those basic skills and apply them, because that is, you know, staying on budget, staying you know, on schedule, and communicating well up and down the chain. Those are some of the basics, but it's like I said, it's so simple, people take it for granted and don't do it well. And if there's one thing that managers respect, it's staying on time and staying on budget and being communicated to. And the same thing for people that you're working with on your team or that work for you, is being kept in the loop and understanding that you as the manager are successfully managing a project is crucial as well. So I mean, it's kind of the basics, but it's also, people overlook the basics and try and do the fancy stuff. And if you nail the basics 9 times out of 10, you're gonna continue to do well.
Anything else you'd like to say?
Earlier you were asking me about interviewing, and I said I'm actually in the process of hiring right now. And over the years, I've gotten a little bit more, we'll say, precise about the way I interview. And I'm trying to be as transparent as possible with what the job requires, what I expect from a person, you know, what I'm hiring for in general in a Microsoft employee versus what I'm hiring for specifically for that role. And at the end of the day, I expect the candidate to be very frank and to be very transparent with me as well. Clearly, people who are applying for a job want the job and want to get hired and will say or do almost anything to get hired sometimes, but it's really critical for your success and for the success of the hiring manager that you be as honest as possible and as transparent. And I respect the people that when I ask them, do you have this skill, do you have this, a lot of people will just say, yes, 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 I've got that. But I respect a lot more the people that say, you know what, that's not one of my key strengths right now. That's an area I'm still developing on. I'm very passionate about developing and learning that more. Or, you know what, that's not something I'm strong in, that's not something I want to pursue. And so I would encourage people who are applying for jobs to be as forthright as possible in that hiring process. Trust me, the last thing you want to do is get a job that you think you want and then find out later it's not the job that you envisioned, it's not the job you're qualified for, and you're not going to succeed at it. It's super, super important to be as honest in that transaction as possible to make sure it's a good fit for you and a good fit for the manager.
Great. Good. Thanks.